red recording lights like a sunflower growing in the sun. Lindsey Graham, the poor man lives his entire life trapped in the Blair Witch Project. For God's sake, I've seen Chihuahua in handbags who are less fretful and shaking. This is what is said about these politicians by you-know-who, John Stewart, who we will miss dearly, Nancy Pelosi, and that's how the precedent was set. A woman leader could be every bit as politically craven as her male counterparts. And on John McCain, the John McCain military victory plan for America is the same as John McCain media strategy. Be everywhere, all the time, forever. And, of course, we're doing that. It's a little situation. We've got ourselves up against a couple of big fretful things, some of which will be talked about other than what I'm going to talk about, which Floyd will. His country's oil export revenues and currency have slumped. Roger Altman, economist, has stated flatly, Russia is down to 140 million people and losing a million a year, and maybe more, all the time. They've questioned whether he is leading them or not. The people are not so behind him as people might think. Putin sat down Wednesday in the Belarusian capital of Minsk with leaders of Ukraine, Germany, and France to discuss the conflict in eastern Ukraine. And now, supposedly, and I'll go into this later, whether they have a deal. You know, maybe not. An inch here, an inch there, and pretty soon you got the whole country. But you buy their debt when you do stuff like that, and it costs Russia even more. So they're flushing themselves right along with the cost of oil, and their infrastructure is so massive for repairing and need of repair of their oil wells, which are very old. Their winning plan is not winning anyway. There are some other things, but John Stewart's going to be missed, and we've got, of course, we've always got Brian Williams to change the story for a new story and what's happening next. So, anyway, what's happening next with you, Floyd?
Well, there's speculation about actually having Brian Williams replace John Stewart. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It'd be a joke.
Well, John Stewart is a comedian. That's his profession. He's a political comedian, a pretty good one at that. But there is speculation of having Brian Williams replace John Stewart in The Daily Show. So.
You know, that's an interesting thing, because young people regard Stewart as a very credible individual. And now they've come up with some new stories that are being validated as to their truth. And they make Williams just look like a craven individual for attention. With all of his power of being in the media now, and NBC is going to have one hell of a time in 6 months deciding whether to put him back where he was. And if he goes to the comedy channel and works with Liz Winstead, the writer for that channel and the producer, you might see Williams in some role. That would be interesting. That would certainly get some attention and some laughs, but it would certainly bring that poor man to his knees, I would think.
I'm not quite so sure about that.
No.
There's a lot of credibility to the Jon Stewart show, The Daily Show, as a reliable news source. I mean, he really does exaggerate. He does play with the news. He does satire.
Well, I wasn't saying
not quite to the degree that Colbert does satire, but
I wasn't saying it. I think the younger people feel that he's the essence of the news that Stewart is. And that, I think, would fly against where Williams is, unless Williams could. Williams is making up stories. And if you make up stories and then you say, well, the real truth is this, and you know, like Crossfire, is it really Crossfire? Is it really debate? And he killed Crossfire. The interest in Crossfire went down the toilet, Stewart did. So it's and the willingness to punch through the pomposity and the nonsense and the lying and the fakery that is what we get for the media when you actually are proposing more of the same, and you go on for Letterman and seriously say, well, yeah, they gave me a medal for a broken piece of metal from an explosion from a helicopter, and the people, the SEALs people, says, well, we're going to go around collecting little remnants from situations so people can have trophies, and we're going to give it to Brian Williams. What a joke. So, you know, Lawrence has hit on this verse of the week, and others have said the same thing, John, from Sarasota. And so we've got all of these people on board on the questionable credibility of the press. And right now, NBC has said they're going to suspend him for 6 months, Williams. And here we are talking about Brian Williams and Stewart almost interchangeably. And I think NBC has basically told their regular people on MSNBC, we're not going to give you any information beyond that. And there's a real hammer hitting these broadcasters or these talking heads. Maddow complained about that recently. She was saying, we have to wait to be told what's going to happen. That's you'd expect that on Fox, but now you can certainly hear it on MSNBC.
We've got a caller coming in. Let me put him right on, see what's up. Caller, you're on the air, I think. Let's put the phone up here.
Here we go.
Try again. Okay, caller, you're on the air. You're talking to the Morning Edge. Would you want to weigh in on the subject?
Hello.
Hello there. Let's see.
On this subject.
Of course we knew it would be Lawrence.
Yes.
Well, morning, Lawrence. So you always,
good morning.
You like a cup of coffee.
I heard you mention, August, that Brian Williams, supposedly he's been accused of whatever, but he made up stuff. You know that. He made it up.
If you were listening, you may not have, but that's exactly what I said.
He embellished it.
All right. But I want to weigh in on what I think is the big picture that you're both missing. The big picture is not the credibility of the journalism framework in this country. The real issue is a corporate issue, a corporation issue. And I don't know if you've thought about this, but all of this is in and under the umbrella of the NBC Corporation.
Well, I'll say all of it. I would say a large part of it, but I don't think all of it. No, I agree with
you. Well, I want you. What do you mean? Brian Williams, NBC.
Well, what I mean is
Chelsea Clinton, NBC.
You know, Lawrence, you're always accusing people of things, and the truth is, I would include a bigger control factor. Let me see. What's this guy's name on frequently oxymoronic xenophobia? Oh, that's Roger Ailes. And that's what Fox is. It's all about fear and fear of the other.
Okay, but I was talking about NBC, where Brian Williams comes from.
They're the same thing, Lawrence.
Oh, okay. Well, what's the oxymoron for NBC?
Let's see.
Your bias is showing, and I'm saying to you that Brian Williams will be fluffed off. No big deal. He paid his dues.
He's
done his time, and that's okay.
Lawrence, I would wager a bet with you, Lawrence, on that one. But go ahead, Floyd.
May I interject, Lawrence? We've had this conversation several times this week already. It would be refreshing to hear something new, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying the same old thing. We agree that Brian Williams overstepped the bounds of truth. Is there anything new that you can add to the conversation? Anything constructive that you can add to the conversation? Yeah, we'd love to hear this.
How do you change what's been happening? How do you get people? How do you avoid having the same kind of person come back and do what Brian Williams
does? I would like to expound, if I may.
Well, we'll give you a chance. Sure.
I'm just saying, Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yes.
On the race-baiting poverty pimp
let me stop you there for a second. What in the world are you talking about? When you say you keep using the term race-baiting, what do you mean by that? I really don't get that.
Well, I think that's obvious. I think it's obvious. But the large majority of the world knows that this tax-evading race-baiter is quite
Lawrence,
obvious.
I asked you, Lawrence, to give me a definition of race-baiting, not tell me it is the same thing and say it five ways from Sunday and make a statement. This is race-baiting. Why is it race-baiting?
How about Duke Lacrosse, Tawana Brawley?
Those are illustrations.
What is that?
But Lawrence, did you hear my question? I guess you didn't. My question is, define race baiting.
Duke Lacrosse, Tawana Brawley.
Okay, thank you, Lawrence. I appreciate your call.
Well, hopefully, we'll hear from your explanation to that.
Those are statements. Again, they're not really anything more, but okay. That's all right.
But thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. We hope you have a good day, Lawrence. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's good. And that's the problem, that some individuals have. They want to lay out and slam this or slam that and have at it. And I'm fine with that. It's just that whether I'm fine with it or not isn't important. I had gone through a litany of things actually criticizing the hell out of NBC, and their own staff is criticizing. So I think you've got a situation now where they are going to have to really look hard at how they choose the people they choose. If you're going to have cloying, sucking up going on in a system, you're going to have things like Fox News and NBC. So we have another caller coming, but this issue of credibility is pretty important, especially in the news, if people are going to trust people in what they have to say and what their viewpoints are.
Okay, we have Pat on the air. Pat, welcome to the Morning Edge. You want to weigh in on our conversation?
Actually, not this one. I want to change it.
I appreciate that.
I wanted to comment on the movie Selma.
There we go. Good.
I went to see that a week or so ago, and I've had people ask me why on earth you want to go see it when you lived it. And actually, I feel that people might find something interesting, and it's also kind of a reminder that of where we were and how far we've come, but yet how far we have to go with the racism in America.
I think I think Pat, you're absolutely right. And the Ferguson, while it was reckless burning at first in reaction to the death of Mr. Brown, the New York scene and the death of Mr. Garner, which, you know, believe your lying eyes, the guy was murdered by a police officer, and the damn thing was covered up by a grand jury incident, and the grand jury has been used to indict when the prosecutor chooses to indict and forgive when the prosecutor protects the police. And that's what's been going on. The police are the enforcers of racism. And in Selma, marching across the bridge, there were two marches on the bridge in Selma. And what's the deal with that? You know, the first march went across and they were beaten and driven to their knees and so on. And the second march started. And Martin King chose to do what? What was it he did there? Do you recall?
Well, yes, he decided not to go because the police opened up the pathway, but he was suspicious that they were going to open it up and then close it in Montgomery,
and
they
them.
Would be trapped in between, mm-hmm. and he had too many people to worry about their lives, you know, which was a very brutal example the first time of how they were treated, but that was hard to watch. But I also think if we look back to 12 Years a Slave, to see the inhumanity that was took place in those days, to show that we are not moving very fast with racism in America. It's alive and well, and we spend our time on a lot of the news media talking about other countries and their problems and that, you know, like we know the answers to everything, and yet we aren't able to deal with racism.
And this has got to be the embarrassment to the world in the minds of anyone looking at this country from the outside in, sees the evidence, the in-your-face evidence of the killings of people, and particularly from police to the minorities especially, and their skin color is a factor. And here, at the same time, we've got this great contradiction of a white or black president, depending on what you want to call a man who has both white and Caucasian blood. And
he's a mulatto
blood.
By any
well, or
name.
Mulatto or whatever term. Yeah. So how do people from the outside look at us and think about us in that regard, you know? We have the high prison rate, 700 and some thousand in actual jails, not in, in the general prison system, but in jails in the counties all over this, all over the country, over incarceration and for minor offenses. Actually, we now have what amounts to a debtor's prison system over traffic violations and ticketing and felonization. Felonization is just rampant in this country, and Florida is one of the worst offenders for felonizing people over minor offenses. And what happens when you get a felony in Florida? You cannot vote. Your voting rights are taken away. And what were they marching in Selma about? What was that? Why were they really, what got it going?
Freedom. No, just the freedom to be wherever you wanted to be when, to vote was his issue.
You saw the scene where the woman, the black woman, and she was forced to recite the Constitution,
how many voting districts were there in the state of Alabama, and then and who were the representatives? I mean, who were there? The judges, that was it, the judges. And then she had, he says, name all 67. Well, that's ridiculous. Could you name all of them in Florida? I couldn't.
Well, there are 67 counties in Florida, but could you name the judges? I mean, this, and he says,
no,
I decide
ridiculous.
The guy said, I decide if you pass the test, if you get to vote. And what, and of course, the symbolic stamp, and some people would say this is only a movie, would be, she was denied. But that was the practice, and that was the synopsis of how people were handled at that time, and ironically, still handled in the deep South, Alabama, Mississippi. They're still being denied their rights and throughout certain states where the effort to, what is that thing they call gerrymandering, packing districts and all of that, you know.
Oh, it absolutely does happen. Here in Florida, we have gerrymandering. We passed a constitutional amendment to prohibit gerrymandering, and the Republican-controlled legislature went right back and re-gerrymandered the districts. As an example, District 13, going back a couple years ago, before the law was passed, went from Sarasota County up 41 through Manatee County through the poor minority area,
all the way into Pinellas
County, went through three counties like a snake, like a gerrymandered salamander type of creature, and it went through three counties just picking up the minority voters to pack them into one district to guarantee there would be a Democrat in those minority districts, but to make sure that the other districts would be non-competitive to Democrats. For instance, in Charlotte County, there was an area out by the Gulf, like Longboat Key, that was put into the Sarasota District 13, that was highly, there was District 12, the one that was gerrymandered, that was highly Republican to make sure that the Sarasota would not have a chance to begin Democratic, because they took an overwhelming Republican area, and put it into District 13. This was Catherine Harris's, and this was Vern Buchanan's district, to make sure it would stay in the hands of Republicans.
Well, in line with Pat's point, and your point as well, you've got a situation where the system is being rigged all the time, and it's being polished over to make the system work all the more so, in the face of the fact that in the state of Florida, there's a million more people that are registered as Democrats. But packing and all of that makes the gerrymandering work in the state. But some of the things that happen in this state within the counties are the fault of the counties themselves, and the fact that they have single-member district and at-large voting, which we can talk about as well. But so what happens to the minorities, they find themselves all getting, they get their representative, but they kill off the chance to get more Democrats or someone from an opposite point of view, from the Republican point of view or the conservative point of view, happening to change anything.
So what they're doing is they're super packing certain districts to make sure there's minority representation, but they're taking the what would be competitive districts in the surrounding areas. So let's just imagine a star, and you take one of those stars or something in the middle, and you pack it with just Democrats by drawing this district through several counties and wrapping around like a snake or like a salamander, and you're going to pack that, and then the branches of the star, you go in and you put in Republican areas to make sure that you're going to get one super PAC Democratic district, and you're going to get four districts that would be guaranteed Republican, but they'll just kind of swing it by 55 or some percent of the vote, 55-45% of the vote, but they're guaranteeing these elections. And as a consequence, the Republicans control the legislature, and when the voters of Florida in the past election voted to outlaw gerrymandering, it made no difference. Well, they went right back and they redrew the districts to guarantee again they would
judge
be in power.
And now Judge Norris, who's, I forget what district he's in, but he's a federal judge, he's ruling that that's been outlawed, and he's going to make a decision shortly on how they may be under the state of Florida, because of this behavior, may be under the guidelines from the Justice Department as to prejudicing the vote. And but what you say, Pat, and what happened in that with that black woman is still happening, isn't it?
In my view, it isn't to that. Now it's more with, it is because it's more with felons, though, I think, these days, because so many black, young black guys are put in and under a felony, and then they come out and they lose their voting rights. So you can take them away one way or another. I think the movie also pointed out the political part of this whole thing. I mean, President Johnson didn't want to do anything right then. He wanted to wait. He wanted to, you know, do it at better political time. And of course, King was pushing because they had the momentum going. So it's just a real complex situation, but. And I think, you know, it's not going to stop. I just heard a discussion the other day about California and Arizona having a lot of problems with gerrymandering that you're talking about, and that it just keeps changing back and forth. I mean, California's a Democratic state generally, and Arizona's a Republican state, so of course they have their own. But it's a tough nut, and I'll let you guys go ahead and discuss
Pat,
I have no answers.
Let's add to the facts that you mentioned about what happens here in Florida. As far as people who may go into prison for small offenses, and we have a high rate of incarceration here in Florida, but just even small amounts of marijuana, especially if you're black, can put you into a prison here in Florida and for over a year times, and then you lose your voting rights. Now, the current governor of Florida is restoring the rights to 1 in 10 compared to what Charlie Crist did. There's just a huge number, but he's restoring only 1/10 of the applicants that come in compared to what used to happen under prior governors here in Florida. So there is a voter suppression right now, and he realizes if he can take a look at those and guarantee that these people who may vote Democratic are not going to vote that way, it's absolutely happening here in Florida as far as discrimination. And here in America, we have one of the highest incarceration. Actually, we lead the world. That's one of the things we're great at. We lead the world in prison incarcerations per capita. And we have well over 1 million prisoners. I think it's 2.1 million prisoners, 2.3 million
nationally
that we have locked up right now.
In the regular jails, which is not the prison system, and that's the over-incarceration includes prisons, it's 700,000 in regular jails, county jails.
But I think the figure is 2.3 million Americans are in prison. That's who are in prison right now. That's not counting the tens of millions of people who have been in prisons, have been locked up. It's a very big, expensive thing. What you do when you lock these people up for small amounts of marijuana and for nonviolent crimes as opposed to rehabilitation, there is a cost. It costs more to put a person in prison than it does to put a person through a prestigious college institution. There's also the cost of when they get out. Now they have this handicap of trying to get a job and trying to be part of society, and they can't. Not only are their voting rights taken away from them, and other different rights are taken away from them, but to integrate into society is very difficult, so it makes it more difficult for a person to adjust. And that's not one of our callers.
Just leave that.
I'll hang up and listen on the air now.
All right. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate your call. Now, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 941-745-1490 to call and join in the conversation on The Morning Edge.
Yeah, this is 745-1490. Now you got it on the other line now, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, this situation with over incarceration is huge, and Salmo really illustrates it, and why the people react if they feel like their rights are not going to be upheld, and their children they have to protect and keep them off the streets because they're under threat from. Some police who happen to be rogue and maybe are racist as well. It's quite a problematic circumstance. And at $100 a day, when the cost of incarceration in a local jail is on average about $100 a day to keep them there, and that comes right against your property tax bill. So I think we have a caller coming in.
Yeah, we do have a caller on a topic, and let me talk to you, the caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is CJ.
CJ Zaya, good morning.
My God.
Hey.
Good morning. You guys are right on spot on, and what a dynamic duo on the radio. Well, let me tell you, I've been driving from Tampa, and as soon as I got in the area, I put on the radio, and you're spot on. It's refreshing, even to hear Lawrence. Augie, and listen, you guys are just being amazing and right on topic with you.
Well, you know the immigration thing and the deal with the Homeland Security bill that's going through, or they're trying to go through, and Obama's going to veto it. It's because included in there is the deportation issue.
Well, it's privatization of prisons, privatization of everything. It's all about making money, not about the people. And, you know, I used to believe, government doesn't know how to run a business. They should be business. I think government is not a business, and they're not supposed to be running these in a profit mode. They're supposed to be incarcerating people. When you get profit involved, it ends up, they take liberties to make more money, and that's not what it's supposed to be. So I think it's a big problem in this nation, and that's the privatization of prisons, the privatization. I mean, even the counties make a lot of money when they house detainees from immigration. I mean, it's the way the county, so it's not just Correction Corporation of America, but it's the local governments that make a lot of money from the federal government to continue to pay the sheriffs and the jailing and the whole infrastructure that they create. I bet if you look at what Manatee and Sarasota County spends on the sheriffs and policing, it's crazy. Then people like me who made a lot of money defending people, or the prosecutors, and so it's the lawyers, the candlestick makers, everybody get a piece of it. And really, I it's a sad state in our country, and it needs to change.
You're hitting the ball out of the park as far as I'm concerned. But the thing about it is, I heard a debate just recently in the legislature, a live debate, and it was to the effect one person was saying, we've got to do something about improving what we're doing in the jails and in the prisons separately. Some of the prisons separately would be federal, but not necessarily state prisons. But what they do about that is federal laws coming into play. But the point is that if you're going to incarcerate the way we are doing it and not recognize and tell the people that this is the cost you're paying, and we don't want all the beds filled. The private industry comes in and, no, we can guarantee those beds filled. And so the debate was, well, it's better to have it privatized. They make the money and they cut the costs. And what is it they cut, CJ?
I think it's just a big problem we have. I don't know. You know what's interesting? I've been up in Minnesota and comparing the justice system and the systems between what we have here in this community and up there. And honestly, Florida is a lot better in a lot of things when it comes to, I'll give you a couple. Everybody thinks like what we do here is probably the same everywhere, and it's not. Well, we do a lot of things that are not so good here. But the thing that I do like in our criminal justice system here is we do get people before judges the next day after they're incarcerated. We do have a right to depose the witnesses like the police. And in Minnesota, you don't. There's no hearings. It's very strange. In every jurisdiction, there are things that are positive and negative. But overall, in our nation, and this is everywhere, I think the big problem we have is that they're trying to privatize everything and create a system that it's not going to work, except for the people who are making the money.
CJ, that point about privatizing the prisons, for our audience, want to tell us when that happened and what it really means? Because it's an interesting story about the privatization of Florida prisons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When did it start happening, CJ?
I don't really know the date of so much, but I know that it's always been. I really don't know, to be honest.
It happened after the election of a guy named Scott, and some of his cronies who helped to give him campaign contributions were interested. Were interested in privatizing prisons and making money off of it.
Way before then. I mean, even Jeb and those guys, and before then, because there's always been that debate when it actually happened versus when they started pushing the theme. And the reason is this. Let's go back to Jeb when he was governor. They started privatizing. You know how they cut the grass in the median and they do this. They try to privatize a lot of stuff. And I think the reason why the politicians like to do that on the right is, of course, they get kickbacks for campaign contributions and everything else.
Contributions,
that comes
close absolutely.
To them when the re-elections.
Absolutely. And then they cherry-picked who went into the prisons. So the private prisons got the low offenders, the nonviolent offenders and stuff like that, and the public prisons, if you will, got the more hardcore prisoners. So there's a difference as who's in what prison.
Well, with that being said, the point is, when you incentivize profit, you make profit the factor in health care, in prisons, wherever, then the beneficiaries or the victims, as the case may be, are the result. And what kind of victimization? It's called, in the case of the prisons or the jails, is bad medical care. Mental health care is absent. It's a mental health. These are many times in the local jails, nothing more than debtors' prisons and mental institutions pretending to be county jails.
You know, I was just sitting here listening to you guys, and I thought, man, there's a couple people that could be elected officials. the two of you, if one of you have actually would get that done, it would be amazing.
Yeah,
and I hope you guys continue to be politically active. Always voice in the community, community activists, people with real care for this community. The two of you are amazing, and I just wanted to call in. I only had a second, and I wanted to say thank you very much.
One thing that I want to mention to you, and we've had this in the past, and I'm going to try to bring them back. There was a gal up in Minnesota who's dealing with sex trafficking, that's sex rings of children, 11 to 15 years of age. We talked, and I had proposed to her, and I proposed this on this issue before, but think about a John's Law, which means if you go online to see child pornography, you go to jail for 6 months, they catch you twice. But when you go and contract to have sex with somebody, online or otherwise, to have live sex with them, that's just nothing more than the criminal prostitute in the age of 13, 14, 15, something like that. And this is what we have in this country, a John's Law, where you go to jail just like you would for statutory rape of your next-door neighbor's kid. Why not make that comparative? And where do you think of that?
There's a lot of problems we have in our criminal justice system in between every jurisdiction. For example, in Minnesota, they call a DWI, which we call a DUI here. They're horrendous with the first one. I mean, you can do jail time the first one. If you don't blow, it's a mandatory criminal penalty. Here it isn't. But if you kill somebody, you'll get 48 months. Here you'll do 25 years impaired. There's so many disparities between the different laws, and I think you mentioned early in the show, which you're exactly right. They put too much power in the hands of the prosecutor now. Even here, I'm good friends with Ed Brodsky here. Used to go up against him all the time in trial locally. Ed Brodsky's a good guy, but what they do under our system, they've taken the power away from judges and they put it more in the prosecutor based on what they charge. And I think we have a big problem across the country. There's not an equal level playing field. I mean, even in the procedures, in the laws themselves, in the penalties, and what you get. And we think of ourselves as one nation, but we are divided into all these states with different penalties. And, you know, one state you get executed, one you don't. There's a lot of room for improvement. And in every state in the criminal justice system, you can find something to improve and make better. But I will say this, and I'll leave you with this. Still the greatest country in the world. If you're, I think the freedom of the democracy depends on a good criminal justice system that makes the government prove somebody guilty beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. Is it perfect? No, but it's less likely we're going to have people locked up for political reasons because we have such a high standard. And remember, we don't like innocent people being convicted, and sometimes we let guilty people go to protect the innocent in a sense. And overall, we have the best system, a criminal system. Can it be better? Heck yes. Can we do better things? Absolutely. But I know I'm very proud to serve in guaranteeing democracy, and but too many of us don't understand the role that defense attorneys don't lie for the client. They do not, or they're unethical. That we are just there to guarantee that justice occurs and innocent people aren't convicted, and that racism doesn't permeate into the system, which of course it has and does. I'll say of all the cases I've handled, which have been thousands of criminal cases, I'd say only one guy that I thought that was innocent was white. Everybody else was Hispanic or black. So we do have a disparity. We still have problems, and we need to keep working at it. And guys, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm big fans of both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you, CJ.
Appreciate it. Yeah. So we have another
caller. Okay, we have another caller. Let's see if I could drop CJ and put the other caller on. And Lawrence, I think you're up. I think we've lost Lawrence.
Another caller as well.
Okay, let me drop
this. We have to drop that one.
And we had several callers come in.
Yeah, well, if you have called and missed the call, we had the last two callers where we left them on a little bit. So please call back, and the issues are hot and heavy here, obviously, and concerning. And you wanted to talk about the Whack-A-Mo situation with ISIS a little bit, I think, Floyd.
Sure.
You want to go over there on that subject?
Well, I think I wouldn't mind
staying where we're at, huh?
Well, the topic was pretty good, and I don't know if we have enough time to go into the ISIS topic right now. But we're looking at a situation. If you want to weigh in the conversation, it's 941-745-1490. I'm Floyd J. Winters of the Morning Edge, and next to me is Augie. And we're talking about prisons in Florida and the United States in general, where we have a prison population of about 2.3 million prisoners. We lead the world as far as a per capita prison population in our country. And in Florida, we actually have privatized prisons that have become more in vogue since Governor Scott has taken over. They cherry-pick the prisons and the private industries.
When you say they cherry-pick, you mean they're going to give
nonviolent offenders and the easier prisoners
contracted.
To the contractors. Yes, the private contractors, they get those. And there is an incentive to put more people in prison for money. For instance, there is a certain segment, there's multiple segments who do not want to see the legalization of marijuana. But one of the segments is interested in having more people in prison because of that, because of financial gain.
I'm going to be the contrarian here a little bit.
Okay.
Why shouldn't they be in jail? They're going to just roam the streets and commit crime anyway, Floyd. Why should we care?
And here's a topic to look at. If you're a country like Nicaragua or Ecuador and you're thinking about legalizing marijuana because the war on drugs has been a massive failure, it's been so costly.
Well, you're saying
as far
that, but maybe I'm of a mind that says that, I don't think it's a failure at all. I think the more that we jail, the better off we are. I don't care if I pay $100 a day to keep them there. So what do you think of that, Floyd?
Well, it's a bunch of BS as far as the numbers go, as far as the cost of police and the cost of society, the deaths,
but if I don't
the trafficking.
Care, if
and
I really do not care about my fellow man, and I do not care about the cost.
It's not your fellow man. It's what's happening in countries where you have more crime that can kill your wife, kill your daughter, get your son involved in it. And there's a lot of people who get taken down as collateral damage as a consequence of this war on drugs. And it's a failure. It's not working. We're putting so many people in prison at such a huge cost, and as a consequence, we have a huge mess.
The
numbers.
In the Constitution, there's a stipulation: you can't jail people, and you cannot create a. I don't have the book with me right now, but you cannot jail people for debt. But we effectively, with ticketing and things like that, we pile up tickets on people till they become felonized in the state of Florida. And in other states, they basically become, they can't drive their car because if the police pull them over, they get this pile of tickets. Then they get a new ticket on top, but they lose the right to drive their car. So they don't show up in the jail or in the courthouse or wherever, and they end up fleeing from our system.
Well, you've mentioned this a couple of times. I'm not aware of being thrown in jail for tickets. And having tickets pile up on
when you get your ticket numbers dollars up there in the state of Missouri, you can end up in jail.
Let's talk about Florida though. As far as what's happening here in our state, people are going to jail in Florida for car tickets. I'm not talking about drunken driving where they belong in jail, but I'm talking about a situation. What kind of tickets are they at the stop, running a stop sign?
Well, it's not one ticket. It's you get they first of all, the tickets get to be rather expensive. I mean, right now if you run a red light in the city of Sarasota, you get a $185 ticket. Now they've cut that down to about 90 something, but it's still a heavy hit.
Okay,
and,
fair enough.
It's a red light.
And I have no problem with that because people are killed by people running red lights.
Oh, does that really correct it? I don't know. But maybe if you regulated the speed zone so that the people didn't feel like they had to catch the light.
I've got to confess, when I see those red light cameras, it really makes me come to a complete stop, not a rolling stop, but a complete stop. I'm looking at that camera to see if it's flashing behind me. It does make me think twice about going through that.
They've had pictures of people doing exactly what you're talking about, and they're rear-ended. And the guy behind him is looking at the light and not realizing the guy before is going to slap him on his brakes.
That's a possibility, but I'm not slamming on my brakes. I'm just pulling up there, making sure I'm not at a rolling stop. And I have no problem with getting a ticket if I'm going through the red light or other people are. It's designed to save lives. I know it's a revenue maker in some situations where they're playing with the allegedly tinkering with the yellow light.
What are they doing with the yellow light? What's that about?
Well, there has been a number of rumors printed in the paper as well about allegations yellow light synchronization is changing so there was less yellow light to react. I think that's been resolved and taken care of. But we do recognize that some municipalities see this as a way of raising more money by catching more people going through lights. At the same token, if it saves lives, I'm not going to object to that. I had one of my friends say, "Oh my God, I thought rolling red light stops were okay if I was kind of just going slow through the red lights." I said, "No, it's not. You could come to a complete stop." And I think that's fair because how fast are you rolling through a red light? And I have no problem with that. So besides red lights, people are going, well, we have a caller coming in. Let's just put them right on the air because we're getting towards the end of our show.
Sure.
And see what we have. Caller, you're live on the Morning Edge. Do you want to weigh in on our topic?
Yeah, good morning, Augie and Floyd. This is John from Sarasota.
John, welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you well and clear. What do you have to say?
I want to hit a couple. First of all, enjoyed hearing from CJ. He's always really informative, and I used to be on 1490 all the time old days, and it's good to hear from him again. I want to talk about policing and I have something really interesting to offer, but before I do that, I want to make one brief comment about media organizations. People forget because this occurred in Great Britain, but Rupert Murdoch, who's the head of Fox News and head of the larger corporation News Corp, his press organizations in Great Britain were absolutely just scrutinized, and one of his higher ups, who became a press secretary for Prime Minister Cameron, I think actually was found guilty and went to jail for the incredible misconduct of the reporters. He even had to close down a newspaper,
it
the Sun Times. Do you all remember that?
What was the name of that paper?
It was the Sun Times. It was one of the longest circulated tabloids in Great Britain.
He had to close it down because his
reporters, Rupert Murdoch's reporters, were so scandalous, they even were bugging some of the royal cell phones, and they were bribing Scotland Yard detectives. And so, let's just not talk about NBC.
No, that's true. Know? Well, you're ready.
People forget about that huge, huge scandal in Great Britain with Rupert Murdoch's
By the way, Rupert Murdoch is one of the co-founders and owners of Fox Networks. He's one of the biggest executives there.
Well, he still is. But now that he's realizing that his people are rather loose, have loose-jawed and long tongues that don't tell the truth very much, it's a curiosity when they had.
Well, it was just a huge scandal. I mean, and what these reporters were doing, they were breaking laws. They were bugging cell phones. They were bribing Scotland Yard policemen. I mean, it was just huge. Even his own son, had to, who was head of that part of News Corp, I think he was forced out and had to resign.
Yeah,
he did. About, I hope CJ's still listening, about policing, I set aside this newspaper because the headlines were so fascinating. This is a Tampa Bay Times that I'm holding in my hand, Sunday, September 28, 2014. And in very, they did a big investigative story, Augie and Floyd, and in huge, this is the front page of the Sunday paper back in September 2014, big, huge headlines, black people in Pinellas and Hillsborough are at least in huge two-inch headlines here, six times as likely to be arrested for marijuana possession as white people, okay, and then underneath, it's not because of who smokes pot and who doesn't. And it's all about how, even though African-American young people smoke pot in about the same rate that Caucasian folks do, they're six times more likely. Now, these are huge, huge headlines.
Six times more likely to do what? To be arrested and go to jail.
Yeah, six times. And it's only because of where the police are patrolling. Again, this is the Sunday, September 28, 2014. I mean, these are huge. It's almost, you know, these big headlines, Nation Goes to War. These are huge headlines on the Sunday paper. Black people in Pinellas and Hillsborough are at least six times.
And you don't...
And huge headlines as likely to be arrested for marijuana possession as white people, okay? And it's not because of who smokes pot and who doesn't. The first sentence, federal surveys show that 10 to 12% of both races use marijuana at least once a month. What does differ is how the pot marketplaces unfold in various neighborhoods and how police agencies respond.
Well, you know, down in Sarasota, I was at a meeting a couple of years ago, and the NAACP was there, and the sheriff was there, and the police were there, the city police, and black representatives and a black county commissioner. And I stated, I said, it's always interesting to me about once a month the city police go in and do a big bust for drugs. Do you think that the drugs are brought into the middle of Newtown? If you're familiar with Newtown, it's in the middle, upper north part of...
No, I'm very familiar, yes. Uh-huh.
And it's nowhere near the water. You can't...
I went to a small college back in the 70s, and everybody, you know, conservative to liberal, would smoke pot. Everybody. And if the police ever set foot on that campus, they'd have to take the whole two or three thousand people, okay, and jail them.
They have to jail them.
Okay? And I would suspect that, you know, up in Tampa, if the St. Petersburg and Tampa police went to USF instead of some other neighborhoods, they would have huge amounts of arrests of Caucasian young people in college.
Well, that's exactly my point. They go and they arrest routinely in the Newtown area, and the suppliers come from the various keys. The boats come into these different keys at certain houses, and they ship it into the city or drive it into the city or whatever, and give it to the little buggers and on the street, especially in Newtown. And then they tell the white kids in the area, go down and buy your stuff there. But when I said this at this particular meeting, I had a glare from the county commissioner, a black woman, and Carolyn Mason in Sarasota. And mm-hmm. she resented it immensely, but she didn't have the guts to open her mouth, because about the time I finished saying what I was saying, two or three male blacks in the back says, yeah, man, it happens all the time. They bug us once a month, and it always ends up in the newspaper. So this is...
Right. And along those same lines, as was mentioned earlier, but this is just, I'm adding my own commentary, I honestly believe that where felons are not lose their voting rights, I believe it's not a form of punishment. I believe it is a deliberate conspiracy to keep voters from voting for the Democrats, because, you know,
absolutely.
I think there's a calculation, like there's been a calculation to get these voter ID laws in all across the country, to suppress the black vote, because you know, people know that 95%+ of the African-American vote will vote Democratic.
Do you think, John, that this next election, since it probably will not be a black person running for the presidency in 16, that the Republicans will get a little more careless and don't worry too much about suppressing that vote, or you suppose they'll have the same attitude and work at it even harder?
Oh, no, the laws are on the books. Now that they've got the Senate and the House, they're salivating. And they're detecting weakness from Hillary Clinton, which I think you're accurate about it. And I think if I think if they put John Kasich on the as a VP,
Ohio,
they have a good shot at taking Ohio. I'm terrified about 2016. I think Hillary potentially is weaker than a lot of people,
and
if they get the presidency with the House, and we got Ginsburg, who's in her 80s and survivor of cancer, they could turn the Supreme Court over for the rest of my life and many generations to come. Not to mention all the rollbacks and medical care and the safety net and more austerity.
Well,
and also looking for adventurism overseas because they don't have a domestic program that'll please anybody.
Well, they got to put people to work one way or another, don't they? They've got to put them to work building munitions and whatever and continue being the biggest seller of that.
Well, they seem to have done that in the past,
Yeah.
Both of the Bushes, certainly W, I think, I don't want to speculate, but they had no domestic agenda. And I often think that the Republicans turn to a foreign enemy, fear of a foreign enemy. You just watch Fox News, and all the war drums that they beat over there, because they don't have much to offer the middle class, And so I think it's one of the calculations of the Republican Party sometimes to drum up fear, because they don't have anything to offer the middle class.
I think they're called the Dixiecans instead of the Dixiecrats in the Republican Party. But if anybody can, they can, right?
I'm loving your shows, you guys. I'm loving your shows. Thank you all for what you do.
Well, John, thank you very much for your call. We're winding down here on the Morning Edge.
I do have a little bit of an announcement for Monday, but
we'll
go to that. We're going to have Harley Slanger on from the LaRouche Group. And we're going to talk about the missing 28 pages that Bob Graham is interested in. And
Senator Bob Graham, former Governor Bob Graham, who was the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee and investigated that.
They're calling when a convicted terrorist and conspicuous former al-Qaeda operative makes disturbing allegations, it's hard to question his credibility. Zakarias Massawi conspired to kill citizens of the United States and will rightly spend the rest of his life in prison. Whatever the motivations of Massawi's recent accusations of complicity by foreign agents in the 9/11 attacks, his testimony brings to light important questions, most notably the fact that as a nation we have not fully accounted for the sources of the funding of the hijackers and the logistical support that enabled al-Qaeda. So on Monday we'll be doing this, and we'd like you to call in and get your opinions in, or at least get you in the information that Harley Slanger from the LaRouche Group will be providing.
And we have to sign off. I want to thank Lawrence and Pat and CJ and John for calling.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota.